It's Eaton Time with Belton Johnson for the Saskatchewan Cattle Association.
Well, we at this time every week bring in our friend Belton Johnson for It's Eaton Time, and usually there's a variety of things that we like to talk about. And I know for a fact, Belton, you are wearing shorts. If not right now, because you're at work, you'll have them on after work, I'm guessing.
Oh, Evan, this beautiful weather. How can you not wear shorts, man?
This is the kind of weather you live for and think Saskatchewan should be famous for more often. I know that. So NFL draft last night, I'm sure you were glued to that.
And I was, Evan. And there, it started off with the way some of the guys, the guys were dressed, right? So who was it? The running back for Boise State, Ashton Jenty. He had Crocs on.
You know that you and I are going to start sounding old pretty soon if we're critiquing the fashion.
Yes, sir. But it honestly was a great draft, I thought. And again, you never know what can happen with some of these guys, right? Whether they go on to be a leader, maybe you get a first round bust or something. But I'm going to tell you, I thought the steal of the draft was the Chiefs. They had the last pick. I think they traded down. They got offensive lineman, Josh Simons, and he's out of Ohio State, I believe. And, the rich got richer, with the Chiefs. And, I know the Chiefs struggled a little bit on the O-line last year, so I think that guy's going to solidify him big time.
Mm, that's good. The Tennessee Titans with the first pick, picking Cam Ward. I saw mixed reviews on that, some people questioning whether that was the best first pick or not. What did you think?
I thought the same. I actually texted my brother, Cam Ward, is he that good, to go number one and everything? But I guess with his athleticism and everything, and, I mean, let's face it, he put up some really good numbers, at school. Miami, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so, we'll see what happens, right?
It's always interesting, and sometimes the draft works out the way you expect, and other times, it will be interesting to follow along. Jacksonville, Travis Hunter, who they picked number two, the Giants, Abdul Carter. So, yeah, some big names went in there. Interesting, you brought up the O-line, because, of course, we know you have a special place in your heart. If I turn to the CFL, I know TSN analyst Glenn Suter was saying the other day that he thinks Jeremy O'Day has assembled an elite offensive line. McEwen at center, Hardrick, Tate, Ferland. What do you think?
Elite, I'm going to have to agree with Suit. And, the only reason I agree is because of, the growing pains from last year where, and there wasn't really any growing pains because the Riders, they played, about 15 offensive linemen last year. And so, third, fourth string guys were able to get in there, get tested, and again, they held the ground pretty much. And so, you fast forward this year, that means you got a lot of guys with some game experience under their belt. And if I said it once, I said it twice, maybe three times, but, the battle is won in the trenches. It's the O-line, D-line, and if you got a good O-line, any league, you got a shot to go a long ways, Evan.
Listen, speaking of Rider season, they kickoff game number one is Thursday, June the 5th. And you and I on Thursday, June the 6th, are going to be in someone's backyard with a smoker and a whole barbecue package happening. I'm excited about this, Belton.
Oh, you're excited. You had me at the word barbecue.
Yes, so. I know. So tomorrow night is the CNIB Guide Dog Gala. It's happening in Regina. I'm MC of that event. And one of the auction packages they put together is the great Belton Johnson does up a brisket on the smoker. And then we have a whole bevy of food in the backyard. You pick basically what the menu is going to be. You and I will be there. Make no mistake about it. I'm not cooking. I'll pour drinks. Can I do that? Can I pour drinks?
You can pour drinks, and we both should sit down and have a meal with the folks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. We made sure that was in our contract. If we're part of this package, we get to eat there too. Our good friends over at Northern Fireplace have donated a beautiful smoker for this package as well. So it's going to be auctioned off tomorrow night at this event for the CNIB. It's going to be a great event, and then you and I on June 6th, so this will be the Friday after the Rider game, that Thursday night game. No doubt Riders football will be part of the conversation, but looking forward to that, Belton.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, while we're sitting there, you know, discussing things, maybe I can hear what the fans think of, you know, the Riders' first game there.
Of course. That will be. I know you're going to get bugged for recipes and some tips on smoking and all of that kind of stuff, but it'll be a great event. Okay, speaking of that, that's the reason we bring you here. We get mired down sometimes talking about football and other stuff, but what are you cooking up for us today?
Oh, Evan, with the beautiful weather we got here this weekend, do you like burgers by chance?
Oh, boy. Come on, look at me, Belton. I love burgers.
So today, Evan, what we have is double stuffed blue cheeseburgers.
Okay.
So, and with this recipe, we're going to start off, you probably need about, 2 pounds worth of ground beef, but we're going to divide that meat into 6 equal portions. And then we're going to divide each portion in half again. You get where I'm going?
Yeah, I did, although I like the size of the burgers before we cut it in half again. But, yeah, carry on.
So we're going to flatten the beef portions in the thin patties. And then we're going to take half of some Gorgonzola blue cheese and place about a tablespoon of that Gorgonzola blue cheese in the center of the 6 patties. And so we got to make sure that the cheese is, you know, kind of broken into pieces. We don't want it mounded. So once we have that all done, what we want to do is top the blue cheese patties with another patty. Are you following me?
I'm writing this down as you're speaking. I'm ready.
All right. And we're going to gently press all over to seal the patties together and flatten into one burger. So essentially you got the blue cheese in the middle of the burgers, right?
You're right on. Yep.
All right. So we're going to season both sides of the patties. You can do salt, pepper, but me, whenever it comes to blue cheese, for some reason, my Southern upbringing always is something about Cajun seasoning. I like a little bit of Cajun seasoning on my burgers there, especially when I'm dealing with blue cheese.
Give it a little kick, okay?
Oh, we got to. So we got that all done. We got the burger seasoned, got the blue cheese in the center. What we want to do is get the grill. We want to get it nice and hot. And when I say hot, I'm talking 400 or 500 degrees, right? Because that's when we know we're grilling, Evan.
Okay.
And so we're going to place the patties on the grill, cook them for about 5 to 7 minutes on each side or until that burger's cooked to your liking. And, Evan, here's the best part. We're going to top it with blue cheese in the final minutes of cooking. Once that's done, we're going to get a burger bun. And I like caramelized onions. I put a little bit of mushroom, get my tomato lettuce, maybe a bit more cheese. And guess what, Evan?
What, Belton?
It's eating time.
Yes, it is. Gosh, that sounds good. What a good sound. This is the perfect weekend to try that menu.
Oh, I get a new smoker and grill this weekend, Evan.
Do you?
I'm trying this one this weekend.
Well, good for you, and thanks for sharing. Double stuffed blue cheese burgers. We'll throw it up on social media. You can catch it on our Facebook page. I know, Belton, you share it with yours as well. Hey, have a great weekend, and I look forward to catching up again next week.
Hey, have a good one, Evan.
Belton Johnson, and it's Eatin' Time. Our friends at the Saskatchewan Cattle Association bring us Belton every week. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how that package goes tomorrow night in the CNIB auction. Who wouldn't want Belton Johnson to cook for you? He does up the brisket. We've got a full menu. We bring it to your backyard for you and a bunch of friends. And on top of it all, and yes, I'll be there. I won't be cooking, but I'm going to hang out with you that afternoon too. And on top of it all, you get a brand new smoker. Again, thanks to our friends at Northern Fireplace for throwing that in. This is going to be at the CNIB auction tomorrow night in Regina. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Good morning. Welcome to Friday morning, inching our way to the lunch hour. And no doubt today, this is the kind of day that a lot of people use their lunch hour to get outside, go for a walk because the weather is so nice. And it's going to be nice through the weekend. A few people texting in saying, yep, Evan, we've got the equipment in the yard. We're getting ready. Seeding is probably going to be underway in the next few days. Much of the province has been waiting because it's still too wet. Of course, the southeast part of the province still letting that snow melt pretty soggy in that part of the province because of that snow dump that they got up to 18 inches in some parts of Saskatchewan. Well, when we think about getting outside and getting active, I've got a guest here who we've met a couple of times for a variety of different reasons to do with his professional, the work that he does. Alex Fallon, you'll remember Alex has been on. He's the chair of the Western Canadian Economic Forum, which happened in Regina this year. I was happy to be part of that event. He's the CEO of the Paradox Group. He's the founder of Artificial Intelligence Saskatchewan. And he's here today to talk about none of that. Alex, right. How are you today?
Doing well, thanks. Good to see you again.
So, okay, I love what we're going to talk about because it's basically taking care of ourselves from a physical standpoint and something as simple as going for a walk. Can you tell me what are you promoting here today, Alex?
Exactly. It sounds so simple, but it's been such a good habit for me to install over the last few months. So we're all busy with the day job and our side projects and family and kids and activities. And sometimes you get a little bit full and you might get, you know, too busy, a little bit stressed out. And so one day I'd been reading about how good it is for you both mentally and physically to get outside for a walk.
Right.
Could be 5 minutes, could be 10 minutes. So one day decided to do that after work, went for a quick walk around the block. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I felt great after that. Mm-hmm. Kept doing it a few more days. My partner and I would go for these walks. We'd take the kids and it became this ritual or this habit, mm-hmm. walk the block. Mm-hmm. And then it came, we read about habits and how, you know, they're easier to install if you set a specific time each day. So we came up with walk the block at 8 o'clock, which is as simple as it sounds.
And so that's 8 o'clock in the evening?
You know, for us it is, and it could be 8 a.m., but 8 p.m. And you know what? Sometimes it's 7:30, but it's like, go for a walk.
Yeah. So walk the block. So you literally schedule it in at 8 o'clock. And no matter what's going on, you got to try and get out there and make this part of it.
Absolutely.
It becomes a habit pretty quick, though.
That's right. I think after, you know, I don't know what the science is behind it, but after you do it for so many days in a row, it becomes an automatic habit.
Sure.
And, you know, we set our alarms for 8 o'clock and we took it a step further by actually getting a physical block.
Like I see you brought a couple of props in.
Yeah. A little toy block almost from when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, it became like this visual reminder in the household, on the kitchen table, at the front door to be like, I've got to walk the block tonight. Mm-hmm. So we pick it up and we go. And we also found it stopped us and the kids from grabbing our phones because you got something in your hand.
Ah, I see.
It really helped install the habit.
Yeah. So these actually kind of look like Lego blocks. They're like building blocks, right? So exactly. So is this, are you making this a bigger initiative? Are you encouraging people to sign up?
Yeah, well, and that's the great thing about being here today. So we definitely want to spread the word about it. It started off with, you know, friends and family, kind of grew from there. And then the goal is for it to become not only across Canada, but literally want to take this, become a global health initiative where people all around the world literally are doing this at 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So we've launched a website, we've had people order the block, and we've had people sign up from Victoria, Ottawa, even Phoenix. So it's, you know, it's spreading, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. So they can literally order one of these blocks?
Yeah, the website walkingtheblock.com. Sign up. We'll know where, you know, how many people are signed up, where everyone is located, and we'll mail out a block. And it becomes that, just that. You know, you see it and it's a reminder to, hey, I need to go for that walk.
Why is this important to you? Because you are a busy guy. I listed off at the start the Western Canadian Economic Forum and Artificial Intelligence Saskatchewan. Those two things alone, let alone what you do with the Paradox Group.
Yeah.
I mean, you are busy. Why is this important to you?
Yeah, and I think it's because we're all so busy, this became even more important. And sometimes it's hard to, you know, make the time to drive to the gym, get changed, do the exercise, drive home, and you're, you know, it takes a lot of time to stay active and healthy. And so with walking the block, I found that it was just so easy. Mm-hmm. I could just step out my front door, didn't matter what I was wearing, didn't have to get changed, go for a walk. Some days it's 5 minutes, some days it's 45. But it's so easy to do. We can all do it. And, you know, especially when it's like this.
Right. And good family time, Alex, too. I'm guessing your kids probably love it.
Totally. That's, you know, first time I mentioned it to them, they're like, you know, okay, kids, do you want to go for a walk? And they're like, no.
Dad, what are you talking about?
So then one day I said, hey, have you heard of this global health initiative called Walk the Block? And they're like, oh, wow, what is this? I'm like, people go for a walk at 8 o'clock every night. Should we do it? And they're like, yeah. First time it was a 5 minute walk, second time 10 minutes. 2-3 weeks later, it became 25, 30 minutes, and they start talking. And I remember the day we went for a walk around the block. We went past the house, and they didn't notice, and we kept walking. And I was like, wow, this is working.
Yeah. I mean, part of what I love about the way you're explaining, and we've got Alex Fallon here joining us today talking about this great initiative that he started, Walk the Block at 8 o'clock. But how often, and I can speak from experience, are we busy as a family?
Yeah.
Maybe you've got two working parents. Maybe you've got a single parent home, whatever the case. Yeah. The kids are busy, and that precious time when you're sitting down and talking, even sometimes supper, doesn't become the social time that it used to be.
Exactly.
This gives you, especially your notion of grabbing this block as opposed to your phone, gives you a time just to talk.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think we found that that 8 o'clock time, it works because, you know, supper's out of the way. The activities might be out of the way. Yeah. You've caught your breath after work. You know, you're maybe about to sit down and unwind for the night. But if you can get outside for that 5-10 minute walk, you create that space. And it's so easy. Hard to start, but once you install that habit, it becomes easier and easier. And then it's like, hopefully, like brushing your teeth. You do it every day.
I love it. I think it's great. I think it's a great encouragement. And sometimes something like this, and I was going to call it quirky. I don't know if it is, but, you know, just the notion of walk the block at 8 o'clock. It's, I mean, it's different than saying you should go for a walk after supper, right?
Exactly.
Like you've got something that you kind of connect with. And sometimes that's what people need.
Absolutely. And we've also noticed that, you know, when you know your friends are doing it, family, someone in Calgary, it kind of creates a bit of a community. And you're like, oh, gosh, you know, my friend Josh is going for a walk. He sent me a text, a photo. I got to go for my walk. Mm-hmm. And you feel a little bit like, you know, we're all in this together.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, I'm proud of you for putting this together. Thanks. The website is walkingtheblock.com.
Yep.
If you want to learn more about that. Very quickly, I wanted to say I was at the Western Canadian Economic Forum that you put on in Regina. I thought it was an outstanding event. How is the feedback, and are you looking at another venue for that coming up?
Yeah, definitely. Great event in Regina, and we're definitely going ahead with next year. Going to go to Winnipeg and keep the Prairie story going.
Good.
And it's growing every day. We've got people reaching out, wanting to get involved, industry, government, politicians. And it's really, you know, growing, which is what you want when you do these events.
Good stuff. Alex Fallon, thank you so much for coming in, and best of luck with Walk the Block at 8 o'clock.
Thanks, Evan.
Appreciate having you. Okay, coming up, I mentioned earlier in the show that we're honored to have a Holocaust survivor who is going to be doing some speaking coming up at the Beth Jacob Synagogue in Regina later next week. Abe Silverman, Holocaust survivor, will join me for a conversation next here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Joining us, Evan Bray. Great to have you here on this Friday morning edition of the show. And boy, I'll tell you, I have been looking forward to this conversation and this chat since we were able to book my next guest. It's been 80 years. 80 years ago, we saw the end of World War II liberate thousands and thousands of people. Those, of course, who were oppressed, imprisoned, killed, starved, hurt, outcast, were in the millions. The war impacted so many people. It wiped out whole families and bloodlines. And yet Jewish people found ways to survive the worst of the genocide of that war. I am so honored to be speaking with one of those people now. Abe Silverman is a Holocaust survivor. And in this political era that we're in right now, with so much concern over anti-Semitism and being on the rise again, it is a real pleasure and honor for us to welcome Mr. Silverman to our show. He is going to be speaking at Beth Jacob Synagogue in Regina, and we're happy to have Holocaust survivor Abe Silverman join us this morning. Abe, thank you so much for joining our show.
Well, thank you so much, Evan. I'm honored to have been asked to appear on your show, and I look forward to our conversation.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So can you just tell us your story? Take us back. Where were you when World War II began? What happened?
So I wasn't born when World War II began, and in Romania. World War II began in Romania in 1940 when the Romanian government, led by Ion Antonescu, joined the Axis, the Nazi Axis, and imposed all of the restrictions that Nazi Germany had imposed on their Jews were also imposed on the Jews of Romania, where I was born. I was born in 1942, in March of 1942, 2 years after the Romanian Nazis implemented all of the restrictions and all of the horrors on its Jewish population. So my father was rounded up with 3,500 other young Jewish men in late 1941 and taken to a slave labor camp in Bessarabia. My mother, who was pregnant, was left alone and was taken in by the Freund family, who took pity on her. Many Jewish women were left without any means of support after their husbands were taken away to slave labor, and my mother was one of them. Yeah. But she was lucky enough to have been taken in into a ghetto, a fenced-off area that 35,000 Jews in Iași, Romania, were herded into, an area that normally it housed about 5,000. So, as you can imagine, the little shack where my mother was taken in, two rooms and a dirt floor, had 17 people living in it, and that was true about most of the other shelters in the ghetto. And that's where I was born.
Wow.
And my mother was kept alive through the heroic efforts of those in that home to sneak out at night and search for food. Jews were immediately shot if they tried to leave the ghetto. And many of them were shot. Many of them died of typhus and other diseases. Hunger, of course, took many. But they somehow managed to find enough food to keep my mother alive, and consequently, I survived as well. It was quite normal, or well, if you could call that normal. The Jews who were being oppressed and murdered in the most awful kinds of ways understood that if we as a people were to survive, it had to be the children who were saved. Mm-hmm. And I was saved, but many, more than a million, maybe close to a million and a half little Jewish children, did not survive.
Right.
Died in Auschwitz and ghettos and all over Europe, died of hunger and typhus, and so many other ways were killed with bayonets. The horrors, of course, is well known and often unexplainable.
Yeah, Abe Silverman is my guest this morning, Holocaust survivor. We are so honored to have you join us on our show. So those early days where you were born and you painted the picture for us, what did the next number of years look like? Did you stay there? Did you end up leaving the country?
My mother and I survived. My father, who was in slave labor in Bessarabia, at the time was a province of Romania. He had been rounded up. There, out of the 3,500 young Jewish men, he was one of 700 that survived, but had had an awful experience. He was full of lice and had almost died from typhus and beatings. He's blinded in one eye, weighed 60 or 70 pounds, he was emaciated. He did find his way back to Yash, where my mother and I survived the war. He did recover over a long period of time. It was a long period of convalescence, but he did gain his strength back. However, he had awful bouts of depression and often had to have electric shock treatments to overcome depression. My father never spoke about his experiences. He made every effort to shut it out of his mind. He understood very quickly that in order for him to survive, he couldn't dwell on the 2.5 years or of enslavement. So he blocked it out and managed to survive. So he convalesced. He went back to his original trade. He's a butcher by trade. Opened up a stall in the market and slowly started to accumulate a little bit of wealth. It wasn't paper wealth because the Romanian leis were became worthless. The inflation rate after the war was 10,000%, so any currency that you had today was worth nothing tomorrow. Yeah. But he did manage to gather up a little bit of jewelry and decided that, my brother, who's 4 years younger than I am, was born in 1946, so there was now four of us. And he decided that he wasn't going to raise his children, having survived the Nazis, was not going to raise his children under communism. So he was able to contact a Hungarian woman and a Russian soldier who were helping people leave, or were helping smuggle people out of Romania. They did. We did meet them at the Hungarian-Romanian border. We were loaded up on an ox cart, covered up with hay, and we traveled through Hungary in secret. If the Soviets, the Russian army, who was now in control of Romania and Hungary, would have caught us, we'd probably been shipped to Siberia or other godforsaken places, but we did manage to find our way to the Austrian border. We were met by the Jewish agency in Vienna and immediately taken to what was then called a DP camp, a displaced persons camp, which we now call refugee camps.
Okay.
And that's where we sat, waiting for our next step.
Wow. Abe Silverman is my guest, Holocaust survivor. As you tell the story, and even the being covered in hay and, you know, under the cloak of secrecy moving through the country, I can't imagine the stress and pressure on your parents. As a child, I know you were very young. Did you feel that from them?
Well, I was already 5 years old and very much have strong memories of that time. Remember finding our way to the border of Hungary. I remember very well being loaded into the ox cart. A trauma that I lived with for many years was because of an incident that happened while we were traveling. I saw a fire off in the distance through the slats of the ox cart and started yelling fire. My mother, being worried that we would be found out, put her mouth over hand over my mouth and almost smothered me. And for many years, I used to have awful nightmares. I'd wake up screaming, feeling that I was being smothered. So that memory has stayed with me for these many, many years, and many other memories along the way.
And I know that's the basis of part of what you talk about. You are talking coming up in a couple of days at the Beth Jacob Synagogue in Regina. We've only got a couple of minutes left, Abe, but what is your message when you talk today publicly about your experience and knowing that we see, sadly, anti-Semitism still present in the world, in our country? What is your message, Abe?
Well, most of my memories and my presentations about the Holocaust and my personal experiences are given to high school students. And the message I try to leave them with is that silence is not an option. Silence, good people, bad things happen when good people do nothing. And basically, that's what happened to the Jews of Europe during the Second World War. Too many good people did nothing. And when good people do nothing, bad things happen. So I try to impress on students that they cannot be observers in life. They have to be participants. And when they see evil, when they see hatred, when they see bullying, if they don't speak up, it's as though they're complicit in what's happening. And that's the very strong message that I'm also going to give to whoever will listen to me. Those who are silent about the rise in anti-Semitism right now are complicit. We Jews often feel abandoned and alone because not enough people are willing to stand up for us and say, sorry, but this is not acceptable. We don't accept anti-Semitism, and we don't accept hatred and prejudice of any kind. It's a constant battle for humanity to push back against the hatred of one against the other for a variety of just unacceptable reasons.
Well, I know, Abe, the people that will be present during your speech this weekend will get a lot out of it. In the short time we've chatted, I'm just so appreciative that you're willing to share such personal stories, but they really illustrate the struggle that many went through and you know, put, I think, a bit of a personal understanding on a piece of history that so many of us have heard about but haven't got the ability to grasp and experience. So, Abe, for being willing to come on the show and share part of your story here today, we're very appreciative.
And I was honored, and thank you so much for having me on your show and letting me share my story with your many, many listeners. So thank you, Evan.
Thank you. Abe Silverman, Holocaust survivor, speaking at Beth Jacob Synagogue in Regina on Sunday night. This, of course, happening, what are we now, 2 weeks away from VE Day, Victory in Europe Day, the formal acceptance of the unconditional surrender of Germany's armed forces, a big part of that, and we appreciate Abe joining the show. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Thanks again to Abe Silverman, Holocaust survivor, with incredible stories that are not stories. They are life events that he went through. You will hear that if you're attending his speaking engagement on Sunday night at Beth Jacob Synagogue. Speaking of speaking engagements, Pierre Polyev, of course, held a rally last night. He had a media conference this morning. Our reporter Mia Holowaychuk was there, and Mia joins me in studio. Mia, how was it this morning with Pierre Polyev and the Conservative Party?
It was packed today with journalists and supporters this morning. This is one of Pierre Polyev's last stops during his election campaign. You know, as he made his speech, he said everything is at stake and that this election is about change. And that was the theme, of course, throughout. While he was doing his speech, he was really just hitting on those major points of his party's platform. So lowering income tax by 15%, eliminating capital gains on reinvestments. And, of course, he spoke about tariffs and said we need to be more self-sufficient as a country. He said he'd work on improving pipelines and, of course, pledged to eliminate the carbon tax. Today, he also went really heavy on one part of his platform, which was crime. He preached his jail, not bail approach, which would deny bail for people with multiple violent offenses. And he said, quote, that it would actually be the toughest crackdown on crime in Canadian history if he won. So
Hard to argue with that, I can tell you. I personally have a, I would, I think that is a step in the right direction for sure. Was there a lot, where was it again? Is it
TCU Place?
Yeah.
Yes.
Was there a lot of people there or was it just a media event?
There were a lot of supporters that came and stood behind him while he was making his speech. He was also there with his wife. There was a lot of people and a lot of journalists too, kind of from all over. Media didn't get much time with him at all. He only took four questions, actually. Two of them were by phone and none of them were from local media.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So like the phone were reporters elsewhere in Canada?
Correct, in Calgary and...
is that right? Oh, that's too bad. Because we spent so much time prepping you with what question you were going to ask.
We were all in the newsroom. We had many questions ready to go. But yes, unfortunately, he didn't ask any from local media.
Good stuff. So. Well, I mean, I think it's great that he made the stop in Saskatchewan. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate you joining us this morning.
Of course.
Thanks for covering it.
Thanks for having me.
Mia Holloway-Chuk, our reporter from the newsroom, following along Pierre Poilievre's... media availability this morning. Lots of the follow-up conversations on those campaign promises and platform ideas that we have heard the Conservatives talk about over the duration of this campaign, which will be wrapping up with the election on Monday. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.